Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss. We are currently looking for storytellers for the next Tell Us Something storytelling event. The theme is the kindness of strangers. If you'd like to pitch your story for consideration, please call 406-203-4683. You have 3 minutes to leave your pitch. The pitch deadline is October 29th. I look forward to hearing from you. Tickets for the December 6th live Tell Us Something event are on sale now. The theme is the kindness of strangers. We are excited to be partnering with Spark Arts to provide on-site childcare for humans with kiddos. There are a limited number of slots available for this service. Three teaching artists will provide engaging art-based learning activities at the Wilma while you enjoy storytelling for the evening. To learn more and to get tickets, go to tellussomething.org. Thank you to our title sponsor, Blackfoot Communications. Blackfoot Communications connects people, businesses, and communities. They know that strong connections matter. Connecting businesses, connecting homes, connecting communities, connecting with each other. Blackfoot Communications allows its users to utilize the latest technology in voice, broadband, network, and managed services. They keep people reliably connected. Blackfoot serves homes in western Montana and eastern Idaho, as well as businesses of all sizes throughout the Pacific Northwest. You can learn more at goblackfoot.com. This week on the podcast,
La Abuela will come out and startle me. And it's like, is she suspicious of me? What's going on?
I ask him what he's doing on the train, and he says, oh yeah, I take this train and I go over the border and I get whiskey and cigarettes and things I shouldn't have in Thailand, and then I get back on the train and bring it back to Thailand.
But my dad still kept that van because he worked really hard for it and was really proud of it. But if any of you know, in the 80s, a lot of the manufacturers for vehicles, they had a paint issue.
And the girl in the next bed says to me, fais du dancing? I realize she's asking me if I want to go dancing. Wow.
Four storytellers shared their true personal story on the theme, Lost in Translation. Their stories were recorded live in person in front of a packed house on September 28th, 2023 at the George and Jane Dennison Theater at the University of Montana in Missoula, Montana. Tell Us Something acknowledges that we are on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Pendele, Salish, and Kootenai peoples. We honor their resilience and strength in the face of colonization and displacement. We recognize that the land upon which we stand is sacred to them, and we are committed to working towards a more just and equitable future for all. We take this moment to honor the land and its native people and the stories they share with us. Our first storyteller is Ben Catton. As a tall man in Chile, he tries to connect with a deaf grandmother, and that culminates around a parakeet cage. Ben calls his story Parakeetos. Thanks for listening.
Hey.
I'm in Santiago, Chile, having a terremoto. A terremoto is pineapple sorbet and white wine with some liquor drizzled on top of it. Varies depending on where you order one. And it's as unfamiliar and interesting and as intoxicating as the rest of the 3 weeks that I've spent here so far. And I'm with my friend Paul, who I just met in the preceding semester here at the University of Montana, in some classes trying to prepare ourselves for this semester abroad experience. And we're checking in on, you know, how's everything going? And comparing notes on the incredible culture shock that we're going through. And mostly enjoying and laughing to ourselves about all the weirdnesses that we're experiencing. We're coming from Missoula, Montana. I guess you call us a city here in Montana. We definitely are. But now we're in Santiago, Chile, where it's 5 million people. It's a sprawling metropolitan area. I'm getting on a metro in the morning to commute to school, riding these buses. And we're sitting currently on this kind of sidewalk patio in t-shirts and shorts, though it's January. We've just come from 20 degree weather in Missoula, and we're sweating while we're enjoying our pineapple sorbet covered in alcohol. And we're just enjoying how bizarre everything is. We're checking in on, we're comparing notes on the way that we stand out here now. I'm tall, but I'm kind of average tall here in the US. But in Chile, I'm all of a sudden like basketball star tall. And so I get on the metro in the morning and everybody is packed, you know, elbow to elbow. And I don't feel that claustrophobic because I have all this headroom. And I can look over the tops of everybody's, you know, I just see a sea of hair instead of looking at everybody's faces face to face. And we're cracking up because the dogs are a real change. Chile's in this moment of policy chaos about feral dogs in the city. We're seeing this on the news, and if you take a walk during the quiet hours when there aren't many pedestrians out, you can pick up a dog on just about every block, and by the time you reach your destination, you have this pack that's coming with you. And everything's gated, wrought iron gates to get into your apartment or to get into the university, so you kind of like scrape your dogs off as you get to where you're going. And they must just disperse and go back to their block so that you can pick one up again everywhere you go. And so this is cracking us up. And the noise of everything as well. Paul jokes to me while we're having our terremotos that you could fart anywhere in the city because it's so loud and so chaotic and smelly all the time, nobody would ever know. So that's bizarre. And the overnight sounds, it seems that every single car in Chile has a car alarm, a lot of them that you wouldn't think would necessitate an alarm. And they're like aftermarket car alarms and they're very sensitive. So these dogs that are roaming everywhere are setting off car alarms, and there's sounds all the time throughout the night. On top of that, I'm telling him I have two parakeets that live right outside of my window on the porch of the apartment and the host family that I'm staying with. And by the time that the other noises of the city are kind of coming back on board overnight, and traffic noise, et cetera, is kind of drowning out the dog noise and the car alarm noise, that's also when the parakeets are starting to come to life too. So we're asking each other about our host family situations, and Paul knows that when I was placed in my host family, one of my favorite human beings, a man that set this trip up for us through University of Montana, a professor here for a long time, Clary Loisel, who's awesome, he came to me with this kind of coy smile after he'd gotten correspondence through the university about who I'd been placed with, and he told me, "Benjamin, vas a vivir con tres mujeres solteras." You're gonna live with three single women. And then he laughed and said, "Oh, it's two sisters in their 40s and their mother who's in her 70s. They have a couple dogs, some parakeets, sounds very nice." And it really was. But I was also experiencing this moment of a little bit of apprehension there, as explaining to Paul, that I'm having a hard time communicating, especially with the mom. The two sisters' names are Gloria and Pilar, and the mother, who I call the grandmother, la abuela, I still haven't gotten her name. I'm 3 weeks in, because I keep just completely struggling to communicate with her, and I'm embarrassed at this point to ask the daughters or her. So it's the epitome of just, you know, how our communication is going at this point. And this is a little bit of culture shock as well. I'm living in this family that is very different from what I've been up to for the last 5-6 years. I'm a mid-20s person going to college and on this study abroad now. And so I'm telling him, yeah, it's like I try to ask her something, or she tries to ask me something, and we never seem to be clicking. And this is stressing me out because we're in January, which means it's summertime in Chile. And we are in all day, 8-hour intensive classes of Spanish before what is their fall semester is going to begin. And I'm gonna be in varied and more difficult classes very soon. So the at-home element is also part of my training, part of my practice, and I feel like I'm kind of failing and flailing. So yeah, telling him, yeah, I'll come home, announce myself, hola, buenas tardes, and Gloria and Pilar might be at work still, and I'll go sit in the living room, and then la abuela will come out and startle me. And it's like, is she suspicious of me? What's going on? Distrustful? So I have this great conversation, finish our terremotos, and say our goodbyes, get on the metro, ride home, tall, and And sure enough, I go into our seventh floor apartment building. We're in a building that's taller than anything we have in Missoula. That's where we live. And hola, buenas tardes. Nobody answers. I walk into the kitchen and almost like run right into la abuela. Hola. And we're catching up with each other and asking how our day was. And pretty quickly, she's asking me about the parakeets on the porch. And do they bother me? Do they sing too much? Do I like their sound? I'm like, yeah, parakeets are great. But she doesn't seem to get my assurance. And next thing I know, I'm kind of following her out towards the porch. And we go out there, and as we're going, she's telling me, están enamorados, están casados, van a hacer una familia. She's really in love with these parakeets. They're in love with each other. They're married. They're going to have a family. And we get out, and on the porch, there's the parakeet cage that hangs from the ceiling. And she's very short, like nipple high. And so right away you can see the blue parakeet. There's a blue one and a green one. The blue one is sitting outside of its little house on a perch. And it's chatting away. And so she's talking to it right away, making little kissing sounds. And she says, ¿Dónde está tu amante? ¿Dónde está el verde? Where's your lover? Where's the green one? And I'm kind of right behind her, and being tall, I can see the entirety of the cage, including the plastic tray on the bottom that catches the droppings and the seeds, and the green one is dead on the bottom. So I'm standing behind her, and I'm trying to gently call her attention to it. I'm like, está abajo, he's on the bottom. Pienso que él está muerto. I think he's dead. And it's like she's ignoring me, and I'm getting uncomfortable. Like, am I being framed here? Is she thinking I did this to the parakeets? So finally, she's like up on her tiptoes a little bit and sees it, and she just explodes. Dios mío, está muerto! Wailing, runs inside, and I'm feeling horrid. But I'm also a little relieved because the intensity of your reaction makes me think, this isn't a frame, this isn't a setup. So, gracias a Dios, thank God. Gloria, her daughter, arrives home pretty much in this moment, and tranquila, mama. She calms her down and kind of gets information from us, and I'm trying to explain, I was trying to draw her attention to it. It's like she just never understands the thing I'm saying. Does she? It's not my fault. Gloria tells me, Benja, yo te dije muchas veces, ella es sorda. Ben, I've told you lots of times, she's deaf. It's this light bulb for me. I finally understand what she's telling me right now. I guess she's told me this lots of times, but I also feel really good in this moment. I get it. I understand what you just told me. I guess I am making progress. So as bad as I feel for the parakeet, I'm having a hard time not smiling, and grateful for the epiphany. And I think maybe I will survive my classes.
Thanks, Ben. Ben is Missoula born and raised, but spent the majority of his adult life elsewhere, orbiting to Wyoming, Idaho, Wisconsin, Alaska, and Chile. In the midst of those orbits, he studied at the University of Montana to become a teacher, and he has taught high school English and Spanish. Currently, he's pursuing a master's degree in public administration and is back at the University of Montana. He and his wife, Jessie, are doing their best to raise two kiddos to be silly, adventurous, kind, and curious. Next up is Ren Parker, who loves slow travel. She prefers buses and trains, and one day finds herself in a train to Cambodia, whose tracks end just across the border. Ren calls her story Slow Travel. Thanks for listening.
Second. It is my last night in Bangkok. All the lights from the city and the exhaust from the scooters and the tuk-tuks is intense. It's overwhelming my senses. I spent this last month in northern Thailand, in and out of temple stays, studying meditation, and this city was too much for my heartbeat. As I'm walking, I go by an open window. Through it, I see a woman in a beautiful Art Deco dress. She's singing Blue Moon, and for a moment, I find stillness in the chaos. You see, I have spent the last year preparing for this trip. I taught myself how to code, I sold my food truck, and moved to San Francisco. I participated in hackathons and think tanks until I mastered the technology I thought was going to save the world. And I got a job doing that. Sold everything except for what could fit in my 40-liter backpack, and I just went to Southeast Asia. I had it all planned out that I was going to do it overland. I love slow travel. It gives me a moment to see moments between people that you normally wouldn't see if you go too fast. A mother braiding her daughter's hair, farmers tending to their crops, laughter between friends from a hidden joke. These are the moments that make me feel like I truly connected with the places that I visit. The next day, I go to the train station. I'm getting my second train of the leg of my trip. The first leg, I started from Chiang Mai, Thailand, took a train down to Bangkok, where I was presently in Chinatown. And this next one, I was going to take from Bangkok over to the border of Cambodia. Now, I had this plan, all planned out. I was going to go to the border of Cambodia, cross it, and then I was going to get another train or maybe an overnight bus, whatever they had, and I was going to go to Siem Reap, the home of Angkor Wat, and that would be where I'd be for the next month. I make it to the train station. It's old, it's dark green, and I go up to the ticket counter and get my ticket. There seems to be some confusion about the train I want, and I'm like, no, this is the one, and the person looks at me, hands it, and is unsure, and I go and I find my train. It's old and red, peeling paint. It has these giant windows on the side with no glass, so it's just like an open-air train, and when I go in, there are goats and chickens, and I am the only foreigner, and I'm like, all right, this is the adventure I wanted, excellent. So I go and I find a little bench and curl up and put my chin on the windowless area, and it starts going, and you hear this loud screech from the train, and we're off. Now, as we get going, I'm so amazed because there's an entire city on the side of the train tracks. It's like a city within a city. There are gambling halls and restaurants all built from tarps and things like that, and they're just inches away from my face. So as we weave out of this city, there's this kaleidoscope of human experience that it just absorbs me, and I'm just fascinated by it. Pretty soon, maybe like an hour or two, we're out of the city, and it becomes very regular. There's we're going through the countryside, and we're stopping at little stops. People are taking their goats out, bringing other things in. There's chickens, there's all kinds of stuff. It's really neat. And I'm also starting to notice there's this air in there where, like, if I leave my bag, it will not be there in about 2 seconds. So I'm like, got it on my thing. Pretty soon, I look up, and there is this very large man that is walking through. I notice him right away because he's so tall. And he looks down at me, and he has this huge smile and sits right in front of me. And he asked me if I would practice his English with him. And I said, yes, of course. I have something to do, you know? So he pulls out this composition book. And it's old. It's like the one you'd have in fifth grade. It's very worn. He opens it up. And there's all this writing in it from different travelers. And so we sit down and we practice his sentences and his words, things like, where's the train station? How much for this item? When we get to the end of it, I decide to give him some words to, you know, add some more texture to his vocabulary, things like creativity, friendship, joy. And then after, we just start conversing and practicing in open form. And I ask him what he's doing on the train. And he says, oh, yeah, I take this train and I go over the border and I get whiskey and cigarettes and things I shouldn't have in Thailand. And then I get back on the train and bring it back to Thailand. A lot of people here are doing that. And I'm like, oh, I'm on a smuggler train. Good thing I made friends with one. And I'm like, oh, and he goes, well, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm going to go to Siem Reap for a while. I'm going to go there, get on another train, and maybe, or maybe a bus. And he looks at me and he goes, the train tracks stop before the border. There's no trains there. And I'm like, oh, well, overnight bus. He's like, there's none of those either. So I realized that I'm going to be stuck at the border. And right about that time, I look out, this train tracks, they're screeching again, we're stopping, and I look, and the train tracks just stop, just like he said. And I see this crowd of people coming up, and they all want something from somebody, and there's yelling, and it's just chaos, and I just realize, like, I am in definite danger. Definitely got myself into this one with my romanticized white girl ideas of like what things are, you know, really naive. So I must have had a panicked look, and Nam, which was the man's name, looks over at me and he says, you help me, now I help you. And just like that, he scoops me up and starts walking out of the train. And he's so tall, my feet aren't touching the ground. I just cling to him like a little baby primate, like, please, God, yes, help me. And he just walks out, and as all the people come, he's all, psh, 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 just like parting the way, just slapping him out of the way. And I'm just like, press my face into his chest, and I'm just like, okay, here we go. And before I know it, he's tossing me into a tuk-tuk, and I feel myself land on somebody. And I look down, and it's Grandma. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And he's like, sit back down. There's no room unless you're on Grandma's lap. And I was like, okay. So we get to the border, we jump out, and I'm like, sorry, Grandma. And there's a big glass building. One side says customs, the other side has some Thai writing, and I enter the customs, he enters that, and we look at each other through the glass, and I give him a very deep bow that's usually reserved just for monks, because he saved me. And that was the last time I saw him. He gave me a big smile and walked away, and I got through customs, and I was in a very scary border town by myself, and I was like, well, I better get some food, because I don't know what's going to happen, and I should eat, maybe my last meal. And so I find a Thai restaurant, and I'm just missing Thailand, and I order my favorite Thai dish, which has got like some chicken and basil on rice with an egg on top, and I'm eating it, and I look over, and I see the cutest little girl. And she's got this gingham dress to her knees and these little pigtails and a shy smile. And I start playing with her, you know, peekaboo. And the watchful eyes of her mother look down. She looks happy that I'm playing with her daughter. So soon I'm like hanging out. And I go to the mom and I'm like, taxi, Siem Reap? And she looks at me like, girl, what? And then she holds her finger out to say like, one moment, please. And she walks to the phone. It's one of those old phones, you know, that you had to like move to the numbers. And pretty soon she's like having an argument, and then she looks really like, ha, hangs it up and grabs one of the other waitresses who spoke better English. And she said, her brother was going to take me. He's delivering rugs to Siem Reap. And I thought, oh, thank you so much. So in a little bit, a very grumpy brother shows up, like, I cannot believe that you're throwing this at me, you know? And I go over in there, into the van, and the back is all full of these rugs, and I crawl up on top of the rugs, and they're scratchy and smell like goats and must from the wherever they have been stored, but I was safe, and I felt so happy about that. And right as I curl up to fall asleep before going to Siem Reap, the last thing that crosses my mind is, oh, I love slow travel. Thank you.
Thanks, Ren. Ren Parker grew up in Hawaii and lived on sailboats she restored on the Pacific for 7 years. She gave up her nomadic ways and moved back to Missoula 3 years ago to be close to family and has been growing roots here ever since. Ren loves to dance and hike with her faithful dog, Poet, and she spends time with her remarkable Missoula friends. She found her passion for storytelling in the winter of 2022 in a weekly open mic, Word Dog. Coming up after the break.
But my dad still kept that van because he worked really hard for it and was really proud of it. But if any of you know, in the 80s, a lot of the manufacturers for vehicles, they had a paint issue.
And the girl in the next bed says to me, "Fais du dancing?" I realize she's asking me if I want to go dancing. Wow.
Stay with us. Remember that the next Tell Us Something event is December 6th. You can learn how to pitch your story and get tickets at tellussomething.org. Thanks again to our title sponsor, Blackfoot Communications, helping us with the heavy lifting of the expense of producing our evening. Thanks to our stewardship sponsor, Jana Lundquist Consulting, helping us to provide free tickets to populations that might otherwise be unable to attend Tell Us Something events. Thank you to our story sponsor, Parkside Credit Union, helping us to pay our storytellers. Thank you to our accessibility sponsor, The Kettle House, allowing us to hire American Sign Language interpreters at the events in order to be a more inclusive experience. And thanks to our artist sponsor, Crowley Fleck Attorneys, PLLP. You are listening to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm your host, Mark Moss. Our stories in this episode are recorded live in person in front of a packed house on September 28, 2023 at the George and Jane Dennison Theater at the University of Montana in Missoula, Montana. Next up is Abe Curian, who shares his story of woe in which his Indian father mistakenly puts sugar daddy on the back of his van, thinking it means one who gives candy to loved ones. Abe calls his story Middle East Meets the Midwest. Thanks for listening.
An hour south of Chicago, a little town called Bourbonus, Illinois. Now the representatives there, they wanted to vote it and go back to the French pronunciation because of the spelling to Bourbonnais. I'm not French. I grew up there as a kid. I still call it Bourbonus. Now, Bourbonus has a university called Olivet Nazarene University, and that is a private Christian conservative school. And it is the community of Bourbonus, kind of just like the University of Montana, everybody in the community kind of gathers around that university. Well, that is where my parents met. My mom, she's from Superior, Montana. Now that is about an hour west of here, small community. And my mom grew up in the Northwest, graduated from Superior High School. And because her brother lived outside of Chicago, he introduced her to Olivet. Now my dad, he's from India. And so he comes over, he was encouraged to come over and by some of the friends that he had in India that were already here in the States. My dad was a proud man, still alive today, and I will get to that. But he was a proud man with a few dollars, a couple suitcases, and he makes his trip to Bourbonus, Illinois, to go to Olivet. Now, my parents met there, and, you know, going back through this, my dad comes here, and he ends up getting his bachelor's in psychology, a master's in counseling from another university outside of Chicago, and in that community of Bourbonus, he became very well known. And actually, if you know me and how outgoing I am, I have to thank my dad for that. But he was known with organizations. He was in very various clubs and also very known as being a very Christian man. Now, my dad was also very proud with the work that he did and providing for us kids. Myself, I'm the oldest of five. I have three sisters and a brother that are younger than me. And one thing that my dad wanted to do was always take us on a summer vacation or a vacation somewhere. And just like the Griswolds and that station wagon, we're going to go to the 70s. The 70s, everybody traveled in a station wagon. And so we would load up the station wagon, head out to my grandma's house in Superior, Montana, making little stops along the way. And you got to remember, my dad, you know, he's seeing new sights as he's leaving the Midwest and coming out towards here to meet and see the West. And so we go, and one of our favorite stops, and if any of you know this, the home of the Corn Palace is in Mitchell, South Dakota. Oh, yeah, we got it. There we go. So now the Mitchell, South Dakota Corn Palace, if you don't know what it is, they have these murals that are up on the walls and of the exterior of the building that are made from the agriculture from the South Dakota area and surrounding areas with corn, wheat, beans, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, us kids, we anticipated what the theme was going to be that summer as we come around the corner. Another great thing about the Mitchell, South Dakota Corn Palace is they had a huge gift shop. And if you're a kid and you're traveling, you want what's in those gift shops. And you know, most of the stuff in there was probably made in India. So now we end up continuing our trip to Superior, Montana to see my grandma. But now we're gonna move on to the 80s. And in the 80s, we ended up, my dad worked even harder. Us kids were growing, and the station wagon wasn't going to cut it anymore. So we ended up with the conversion van. Now, if you know what the conversion, does everybody know what a conversion van is? If you don't, let me describe it. It is slicked out. It is silver gray, blue pinstripes, captain chairs. So, you know, now that we're older and, you know, outgrown the station wagon, but the back seat was a, it turned into a bed. It was pretty sweet. And then the best thing about a conversion van was it had cable, or not cable hookup because it wasn't connected, but it had a hookup for TV. So we had a TV that we would take along, but if you were stopped, you could get those three channels with the rabbit ears. Otherwise, in the 80s, it was snow and static. So we took this same trip and came out and did our thing in the 80s. Well, in the 90s, we grew up as kids and kind of left the house. But my dad still kept that van because he worked really hard for it and was really proud of it. But if any of you know, in the 80s, a lot of the manufacturers for vehicles, they had a paint issue with like GMC and Chevrolet. And so the van started to get peely and blistery, and paint was, you know, coming off in chunks, and it just looked bad. And my dad was like, you know, well, one, I called to check in on him. I didn't live anywhere near the house at that time. I call him up and I said, hey, Dad, I said, you know, one thing I didn't explain about my dad, let me actually back up, and I apologize for this, but my dad, his character, has anybody seen The Simpsons? So I didn't explain this. My dad, being from India, is a spitting image of a poo. And I apologize, I didn't bring this up earlier. I just kind of, I got lost in that translation. So, but here's, had pun intended. So what ended up happening was my dad would sound like, would you like to buy a soda pop in a candy bar? Thank you, come again. And that was my dad's accent with a poo. But now, the best thing about it, he's in his 80s now, and he is a mix of a poo, and if you know the boxing promoter, sorry about the pops, the boxing promoter, Don King. My dad has gray hair that stands up like this, and Don King was outlandish and a little bit of a character, but my dad had his hair, but the look and sound of a poo. And so, when I called my dad and said, hey, Dad, you know, hey, how things going? He's like, you know, I would like to, with his little accent, he goes, I would like to get the van painted. The van, it's all not looking good. And he goes, I think I would like to have that done. And I said, that sounds great, Dad. And he goes, you know, in the back of the van, there's a wheel well with a tire cover. And he goes, I would like to put a saying on there, like number one dad or something like that. Now, my motto is keep smiling, so that's what I would have. And if you guys see Jeeps out here in the Northwest, they all have sayings on them, like, you know, if I'm upside down, we're having a good time. So I told my dad, you know, Dad, I think a great name to put on the back is Sugar Daddy. I mean, come on. How would that not be perfect with a conversion van with a couch that turns into a bed? So You know, I just laughed it off. I'm thinking that in the back of my head. That's where my mind went. And he says, you know, son, that sounds like an idea, but we'll think. So he goes on, and I don't think anything of it, and I end up visiting him about 4 or 5 months later, and he comes out and he says, you know, son, come see the van. Come see the van. I got it repainted. It's beautiful. So we're looking at the van and the van, because I say van, he says van. But we come around the back of the van, and I said, hey, Dad, what happened to your tire cover? And he goes, you know, son, you break your daddy's heart. You break your daddy's heart. I basically work very hard, and I put money into this van, and you tell me to put sugar daddy on the back of this van. And I was actually biting my tongue to not laugh hysterically. But what ends up happening is, I said, well, what did you think it was, Dad? And he said, you know, I thought it was a daddy that gave out candy. That makes it even better with the whole van. But so, you know, I look at it and go, the sugar daddy story and my dad, with all the stuff that he's done, I'm proud of him, and he worked hard to give us a whole lot of stuff. And I apologize for having him go through that whole thing with the repainting of the back of the van. But my biggest regret is that I never saw him cruising around town in Bourbonus in a sugar daddy van. I'd like to thank my beautiful wife, who is the interpreter tonight. And thank you, and keep smiling.
Thanks, Abe. Abe Kurian is married to his best friend, Bonnie Kurian, who was the American Sign Language interpreter when Abe performed his story. They have 4 children and 2 grandchildren. He has lived in Montana for the last 24 years after moving here from outside of Chicago, Illinois. Abe has worked for over 30 years in the film and television industry. For over 10 years, he has been the camera operator for Grizz and Cats football games for the broadcasts on Root Sports, KPAX with Scripps Sports, and the playoffs on ESPN. He also worked on the TV shows 1883, 1923, and currently working as the dailies coordinator for the show Yellowstone, which is shot right here in Missoula, Montana. His motto is, keep smiling, and his goal is to leave everyone with a smile on their face after meeting them. Closing out this episode of the podcast, Linda Grindy shares her story about a time she was lost in translation. Invited to a disco by French speakers, she ends up breaking into her own hostel to get back in. Linda calls her story Dancer in a Strange Land or Disco Damsel in Distress. Thanks for listening.
The boom from the disco floor was so loud that I had to stand up so that the table full of people would even know that I was speaking. C'est très important. Je fais partir maintenant. Nothing. I tried again. J'ai besoin de votre aide. I need your help. Still nothing. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm somewhere in the south of France at a disco with a group of strangers, and nobody speaks English. And I have 10 kids sleeping in a hostel an hour or more away, thinking that I'm there and I'm gonna get up in the morning and take them on a 50-mile bike ride in the heat of August in the south of France during high tourist season. I need to sleep. I want to sleep. Je voudrais coucher ce soir. Yeah, that sets off a lot of rapid-fire French all around. Punctuated by the occasional English phrase, I love you, my darling. Do you want to sleep with me tonight? To be fair, you know, if I was back in the States and there was one French person, I'm sure you would hear, voulez-vous coucher avec moi? But I'm really stuck. Rewind 10 hours. I'm 21 years old. I'm leading a bicycle trip through Europe, Scandinavia, southern France, for the American youth hostels. I have 10, 15-year-old kids from Manhattan that I am the guide for, the only adult. We have been already 6 weeks on the trail. We've cycled over the fjords of Norway. We have cycled through the farmland of Denmark and Sweden. And just this morning, we got on a plane in Copenhagen and flew to Milan, got on a train and came to the south of France, to Antibes, Cap Antibes, one of the biggest tourist towns on the French Riviera. We've bicycled up from the train station, and as we come to the hostel that we're going to be staying in tonight, I realize it's a chateau. To me, it looks like a castle. It's got round towers and turrets and arched windows that look out over the Mediterranean Sea, which is right across the street. As we push our bicycles into the courtyard, all cobblestoned, we go past these 8-foot iron gates with spikes on top. The only thing that's missing is the moat. Well, I get the kids settled in their dormitories, they're tired, and I find my room, which is on the second floor, up a stairway into one of those round rooms. There are 5 beds, and I barely slip my saddlebags off my shoulder when the girl in the next bed says to me, "Fais du dancing?" I realize she's asking me if I want to go dancing. Wow, I have spent the last 6 weeks with kids. It would be fun to have some adult time. They're all settled. Why not? I say, I reach my hand down into the bottom of my saddlebag and pull out the only dress I brought and slip on some sandals and follow her downstairs. So the first surprise is that there are 2 cars waiting outside, packed with her friends. We're not just walking into town for a couple of hours, we're going somewhere. I climb inside, and after a very brief conversation about who I am, American, and that I'm on a vélo, I'm riding, I've exhausted my vocabulary. And they pretty much ignore me. And we're driving further and further away from town and into the countryside, and it's getting darker. Finally, we pull into a parking lot and up to a building that is like a birthday cake, each floor a different color, and it's pulsing with the sound of disco music. This is the 70s. We enter this amazing structure and start by dancing on the first floor. We have a few drinks. It really is fun. And then move to the second floor, and different tone and different feeling. And I'm starting to look at my watch because it's getting close to 10 o'clock. And the rules of a youth hostel is that they close and lock those doors at 10 o'clock. And I'm looking over at the girl I came with, and she doesn't seem to be concerned. So I figure, well, I guess we're going to break in together. But I do start drinking water. We go to the next floor and continue this rising up through all levels. And now it's getting on close to midnight, and I really am tired. I'm ready to go, but I figure I'm in for the trip, so I have to wait till the bars close at 2. And then 2 o'clock comes and passes by, and things aren't slowing down. They're actually revving up. And that girl I came with, she is nowhere to be seen. And suddenly I start to panic. I don't even know how to use a French phone or how to call a taxi or where I am or what the name of that hostel was, or, oh, I only have a few francs and a lot of American traveler's checks, so that's not going to work. And then I think, oh my God, what happens if my kids wake up at 6 o'clock I'm not there. They don't know where I am. I don't know where I am. There's no way to get in touch with anybody. There are no international phones at the time, or there might be at a post office in some town. There's nothing they can do. I'm freaking out. So let's go back to that table. I'm standing there and I'm getting a little crazy. I keep saying, I have to go in whatever method I can. And finally, a tall, sandy-haired guy steps forward. Let's call him Francois. He wiggles his keys. I think he must have drawn the short straw, because I had become what you would call a real pain in the derriere. They just wanted to get rid of me. Relief is tinged by a little unease as we head into the dark parking lot towards his car. I'm following a stranger out into the darkness, and what else can I do? He's my only hope. We get to the car, and he walks around to the passenger side and opens it for me, but then pushes me against the door and tries to kiss me. I push him off. I'm having none of that. He just shrugs and climbs in the car. We have a very long, quiet ride. But we get there. I see the Mediterranean and that castle, and I'm back. He stops. I jump out. Merci. Close the door, and he speeds off. And then I'm facing the fortress. That big gate now is locked with a big padlock, and I have to get past it. But I realize that the gate is connected into these large boulders, and they look like they've got a good grip, so I manage to get up the boulders and then carefully step over those spikes on the top and hang down and drop into the courtyard. And I figure, okay, I'm in. I can sleep on a bench, I guess, till morning. But I notice that there's a window that's slightly ajar on the hallway that goes up to my room, and there's a ledge and there's a vine. I think I can do this. It must be adrenaline that's driving me. I slip my sandals onto my wrist and climb up the vine and then inch my way along to the window, and thank God it opens easily, and I slip in and get into my bed, and I get 2 solid hours of sleep. 6 o'clock in the morning comes fast, and I hear the bell of the breakfast ring, and I splash my face with water, and as I gather my stuff, I realize that girl never slept in that bed. She never made it back. Well, I did the 50-mile ride, got my kids safely to the next campground. They never knew what happened. I've never even told this story. But I have to tell you, in recounting it, I started thinking about that guy, Francois. So many things could have gone wrong. He was drunk. We could have crashed. He could have left me in the parking lot. He could have taken me anywhere. But he didn't. He left his friends. He left that party. He drove this crazy American off into the night. He did the right thing. After all these years, I'd just like to say, merci beaucoup, Francois.
Thanks, Linda. Linda Grindy keeps trying to reinvent herself, but just keeps coming back to another version of theater. She recently appeared in a multimedia memory piece, Intangible Objects, at the Westside Theater in Missoula, Montana, originally from New Jersey. She has a master's degree in theater and has danced professionally in New York and Germany, acted in and directed plays in London, Seattle, Dallas, Hawaii, and all around Montana. Linda will be traveling to Thailand next year to, you guessed it, teach theater. Thanks for listening to the Tell Us Something podcast, and thanks to our media sponsors, MissoulaEvents.net, Montana Public Radio, and Missoula Broadcasting Company, including the family of ESPN Radio, The Trail 103.3, Jack FM, and Missoula's source for modern hits, U104.5. Thanks to Float Missoula. Learn more at floatmsla.com and Joyce of Tile. Learn more about Joyce at joyceoftile.com. Remember that the next Tell Us Something event is December 6th. You can learn about how to pitch your story and get tickets at tellussomething.org. Listen for those stories at tellussomething.org or wherever you get your podcasts.